Listen to this title, A Knock in the Attic. Oh, true ghost stories and other spine-chilling paranormal adventures. John Russell back with us, and we'll get right into it on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. John Russell, our guest, became aware of his psychic abilities around the age of 6 years old, just a little guy, and started giving psychic readings to friends and family at around age 15. And by the age of 18, he was reading professionally. He eventually became internationally known, has more than 45 years of expertise as a professional psychic with a worldwide clientele, and as a paranormal investigator, has witnessed more than 800 supernatural manifestations. His latest book is called A Knock in the Attic, True Ghost Stories and Other Spine-Chilling Paranormal Adventures. He was on with us last September. John, welcome back, my friend. Hope everything is fine with you.
George, thank you so much. It's great to be back. I'm looking forward to the show. Everything's good with me. I hope everything's going well with you, and we have a lot of exciting things to talk about.
Oh, we sure do. We'll take calls with you next hour. People are starting to call already. They just love this stuff. We talked about your first book, Writing with Ghosts, Angels, and the Spirits of the Dead, but you've got a new one out called A Knock in the Attic, and I got to tell you, that title alone is scary.
That's spooky, isn't it?
What happened?
Well, the title of Knock in the Attic came about because of a literal knock in the attic at our house. When we were living in upstate New York, my wife and I had a two-story home with a basement and an attic. And shortly after I moved in with her, I moved up there from Texas, from West Texas, where I'm from, grew up. And when I moved up there with her, the first thing I did was go around, check all the doors, windows, update the locks, update the alarm system, so on and so forth. Checked everything out on the inside and outside of the house, making sure everything was secure and good. And, you know, a lot of weather in New York, as you know, so I wanted to make sure the house was tight and secure. So shortly after I had moved in, we began to hear a muffled knocking coming from the attic. And so I was like, okay, well, maybe some critter got in or whatever. There was one window, but it was up on the attic floor, which would be, in essence, the third floor of the house. So I went up there to check, to investigate, and everything was locked up tight. Everything was secure, no critters, no animals, no nothing. So, okay. So this continued, and the muffled knocking grew to be more frequent, more intense, and then it became louder. And it became the sound of, if you took imagine taking a hammer and beating on a 2x4. And that's what the sound became.
Wow, that's pretty intense.
It's pretty intense. Well, it gets better. We would hear this all hours of the day and night, mostly during the day. They were pretty considerate, the paranormal guys were, that were manifesting this. They would not interrupt our sleep too much. And if they did knock at night, it was more the muffled, more quiet kind. But this began to increase in frequency to the point that there would be knocking, regular knocking, like somebody was driving in a nail, like bam, 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 bam. And then it would pause and then maybe go again, and then maybe an hour or two later that same day here it would go again. And this went on for weeks, and then weeks turned into months, and then months turned into, I believe, over a period of a year or more. And everybody heard it. I mean, her son heard it, and the animals that lived with us, we had cats. They'd get wide-eyed, bushy-tailed, and run and hide when the knocking started. And it grew so loud that the neighbors heard it. And we had this delightful little restaurant and bar right across the street from the house, and I would walk over there, get something to eat, sit at the bar, and drink and enjoy talking with friends. And not everybody knew what I did. Not everybody knew that I was a psychic. And so one of the neighbors came over and spotted me at the bar and came over and said, "Listen, are you guys remodeling or something over there?" I said, "Why?" And she said, "I hear all this loud knocking, all this loud banging coming from your house. What's going on?" I said, "Oh, yeah, we're remodeling." And she says, "But so late in the evening." And I said, "Well, sometimes that's the only time the guy can come. You know, I just pass it off that way." So it was so loud that the neighbors could hear it. And there were times that I would be outside in the yard, and I would hear the knocking coming from the attic outside. And I went up there several times and asked if there was any particular communication, any particular message that the spirits wanted to convey to either of us or whatever, and there never seemed to be. It was more just like, you know, here we are, and we know that you're at ease with this stuff, so we can manifest and enjoy this form of communication, if you will. And then it progressed to the point that the knocking sounded like somebody hit a sledgehammer and was banging on the rafters. And when it got that loud, I went up, and there was a pile of lumber, an old pile of lumber that was left up in the attic. And when it got that loud, I went up to the attic, and the pile of lumber was moved. And underneath, I'm presuming, where the pile of lumber was, there was a little lace heart made out of lace and laying there on the floor. And I picked that up and thanked them for their gift and scooted the pile of lumber back. And once I got that lace heart in my hand, the knocking stopped and never came back.
What do you think that was all about?
I think it was just, you know, it was part of the normal, regular communications I go through with the other side, and I think the little lace heart, I don't know if that was left there by previous owners or from way, way, way back. The house was 200 years old, or if it was just an apport, if it just manifested. But it was like, you know, a heart always a symbol of love and of compassion and friendship, and I think they were just giving me that and saying, hey, you know, we've appreciated you understanding our communication, and here's a little token of our love and esteem for you, and we're done.
And they kept tapping until you came up there, and they took care of this thing.
There you go. There you go.
So, were you scared at all? I mean, did you think there's something really weird going on here?
No, never, never, never. Like I say, I've had well over 800 paranormal experiences, all of them occurring on the physical realm like this, and never been frightened, never been afraid. There's never been anything that scared me, never been anything that that I've been afraid of, no.
How many people out there, John, though, don't have those kinds of positive experiences that you have had?
Well, not many in reality. The problem that we have, George, is that people misinterpret psychic experiences, and one of the very first things that happens, unfortunately, here we are in the 21st century, and this is still going on, one of the unfortunate things that happens is people will judge a paranormal experience by their religious upbringing, and most people have been raised in Christian churches with the Bible, and that says that's of the devil, and it's evil, and it's got to be a demon. And that's the first thing that hits people's minds. And that's the furthest thing from the truth. You know, we have this wide array of paranormal manifestations, and they can be startling, yes. They can scare you, yes, if you're not familiar with them, if you don't have them all the time. It can be unnerving, absolutely. But it doesn't mean it's evil, and it doesn't mean it's demonic. It just means it startled you, it scared you, it's something you're unfamiliar with, and you default to your upraising. Oh, this has got to be the devil, this has got to be evil. Oh, a demon came after me, oh, something scared me. I'll give you an example. I think we may have talked about this last time I was on the air with you. When I was shooting the TV pilot for the History Channel, which unfortunately never aired, there was a lady that came up to me and said, I've got to talk to you, I've got to talk to you, during a break in the filming. She said, a ghost tried to kill me. I said, oh, no ghost tried to kill you. She said, yes, I was in my kitchen. This plate flew out of the cabinet across the room, crashed into the wall right beside me, broke into pieces on the floor. Ghost tried to kill me. So the ghost didn't try to kill you. If the ghost tried to kill you, the ghost would have hit you with the plate. If the, you know, what the ghost was trying to do was get your attention. I said, and I psychically discerned and told her, I said, you know, look, there are some people here on the other side that have been trying to communicate with you and get your attention for some time, and you've been ignoring them, and they're finally like, okay, ignore this. We're going to get through to you. And so some of the times the ways that the other side can come through to us can be startling. It can be scary. It can be annoying. It can be unusual. But we need to examine it, look at it, and say, okay, look, is this something that's really scary, or did I just get scared? And we have to examine it not in the light of our religious upbringing or dogma or ritual or tradition, but in light of what's actually going on, what's actually being communicated. And that's still the boogaboo that we're wrestling against today.
It sounds, John, that most of your experiences have been pretty positive.
All of them have been positive, and a lot of them have been absolutely, literally life-saving. And I don't mean just figuratively saying, oh, that was a life-saving event. I mean literally life-saving.
Have you been lucky?
I think that I think luck is perhaps an inaccurate way to describe it. I think blessed, watched over, taken care of.
Somebody's watching you.
Yeah, absolutely. And ever since I was a kid, and somebody asked me the other day, they said, you know, who's around you? And I said, well, I have guardian angels around me that I know of for sure. I have spirit guides around me. I have other entities around me that I don't know if they were ever even human. I have friends from the other side around me. I have all these energies around me. And some of these have followed me and have stayed with me since I was a kid. And they've watched over me. They've guided me. They've protected me. They've given me inspiration. They've shown me things. They've helped me in my life and helped me to help a lot of other people. So for me, it's been a very blessed, very fortunate life, and very, very wonderful events. And everything has a meaning. Every communication from the other side is significant, no matter how small it is, because don't count it small. Think of the energy, the effort that it takes to manifest something from the other side. And we should look at every communication we receive as being something fantastic.
What other spine-chilling stories do you include in the book, Knock in the Attic?
Oh, boy, there's a bunch. This goes back to when I was awakened by an old black ghost when I was 5 years old, and that opened up the portal to all these paranormal experiences.
5 years old?
5 years old.
It must have scared the living daylights out of you then.
That one did scare the living daylights.
I knew it,
George. That one did. I don't remember if we talked about this on the show last time or not, but I was five, and I woke up just wide awake. And I thought, well, that's odd. And so I raised up on my elbows in the bed, kind of looked around, and through the open bedroom door down the hallway, my parents had a nightlight down the hallway there. And in the nightlight's glow around one of the doors in the hallway, this old black gentleman was peering around the corner looking at me. And I screamed bloody murder because my family was white. We didn't have anyone black living with us. I can't even remember if we had any black friends back then. So I assumed somebody had gotten in the house. And I screamed bloody murder. And when I screamed, the old black gentleman walked around the corner of the door into the hallway, walked closer to the bedroom door. And I can see him to this day. I can describe him. He had close-cropped white hair. He had on a red flannel shirt. He had on khaki pants, black dress shoes, black belt. And he just stood there. He did very benign, very non-threatening, and just stood there staring at me. And I was just screaming bloody murder. Well, my parents heard me, and they came running. And
saw nothing, I guess.
Saw nothing because he began to disappear at that point. And he disappeared and vanished completely. And that, you know, I was like 5 years old. I was like, how can someone stand there in clothes, in the flesh, solid as you or I, and then just vanish? And so I began telling them, someone's in the house, someone's in the house. And they're like, no, you just had a bad dream. I said, no, I saw someone. And I was so convincing in my fright that they looked under the beds, they looked in the closets, they checked all the doors and windows. Of course, everything locked up tight. And then it dawned on me, okay, I've seen my first ghost. And when that man came, he came and he opened up the portal to all these experiences for me. And then since then, I've never been frightened or never been afraid. It's been a constant.
So he actually helped you.
He actually helped me and kind of prepared me for the fact that, you know, I had this psychic gift since I was a young kid. And he helped me to understand, prepare for that, to open up to these experiences and to look at them and to evaluate them for what they are, for what they mean, for how helpful they could be to others. And so it was an astonishing experience, one that I cherish to this day. And people have asked me, said, has he ever come back? And I'm not really sure that he has, although there have been some interesting manifestations that kind of indicate that, hey, you know, I'm still watching you on the journey here. So it's been fascinating. It's been great.
When we get calls next hour, John, I'm sure you're going to get some calls from people who haven't had very good experiences on the ghostly realm. Why is it that they have had these problems and these scary moments?
Well, you know, let me give you an example from one of my clients.
All right.
One of my clients called me one time and said, I've got a ghost that I can't get rid of. And I was like, okay, let's talk about this. So the client tells me, they said, we were watching Montel. That was back when Sylvia Brown used to be on Montel. And she said that...
Giving reports on Sean Hornback, who she said was dead, and he was alive.
Right. Exactly.
Remember that one?
Exactly. Yeah. 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 She was not one of my favorite people. I'll leave that alone there.
But, yeah, that's right.
But at any rate...
Speak well of the dead.
Yeah. At any rate, she had heard Sylvia Brown say on TV that you could ask for paranormal experiences or ask for whatever this and the other, which is true, you can. And so she did. She said, oh, well, I want a ghost, real flippant like, I want a ghost. So a ghost showed up and moved in with her and began to move things around, began to cause noises, began to do all kinds of stuff, and it freaked her out. So she moved. She left her house, moved to another house. I don't remember if it was in the same city or different city, but the ghost followed her, and the ghost got more active, and it would set all the car alarms off up and down the street in front of her house that she was living in. And the neighbors said, well, this has got to be this woman. This has never happened before. She's got to be the cause of this, and she's got to be doing this mischievously or whatever. And so they called the police on her. So the police came out to investigate, and all the car alarms went off simultaneously up and down the street while the police were there with her, and obviously she couldn't be doing anything. So they were like, okay, we don't know what's going on, but it's not this woman. And so I told her, I said, okay, here's your problem. I said, you asked for a ghost, and a ghost came. Now you don't want the ghost, and you've hurt the ghost's feelings, and you tried to abandon the ghost, and you tried to run from the ghost, and the ghost followed you. Hey, where are you going? I'm here. You asked for me. What's wrong?
That's right.
And now
you summon me up. Here I am.
You summon me up. Here I am. Well, what's the deal? And then you try and leave me. You abandon me. And hey, here I am, and look what I can do. You know, look, I'm here. And I said, so this is the deal. I said, it's like, you know, you ask the universe, send me a dog, and here comes this big slobbery dog to the door. Well, you asked for me. Here I am. So, I said, now you've got the ghost. Make peace with the ghost, because the ghost is not going away. I said, sometimes spirits do leave. Sometimes spirits hang around a while, then they go elsewhere. I said, this spirit's going to hang around for a while. You've asked for them. Make peace with them and do this. Instead of being afraid or instead of being upset because you got what you asked for, talk to the spirit. Say, listen, I'm sorry I left. I'm sorry I tried to abandon you. I'm sorry I got frightened of you. And look, you're here. You manifested that you're here. People see that you're here. Do this for me. Try not to scare me. Give me a little notice that you're coming, or ease in on the noises, the manifestations, or whatever. Kind of ease in on things. And watch over me. Protect me. Protect my house. Protect where we're living here. And keep us safe from break-ins and from harm and from fire and things like that. And watch over me. So I said, turn this into a positive experience. You've got something that there's a lot of people that would give their eye teeth to experience and never have. And you've got that. So I said, treat it as the positive that it is. Learn to look at it in a positive light. And then ask the spirit to help you. And I said, do that. And then call me back in a month or two and tell me how you're getting on. And so she did. She called back. She said, yeah, well, I've made peace with it. I did what you said. Things are great. And I feel now from this presence, this sense of companionship and protectiveness and these things. And she said, you know, it's funny. Now I leave my house and I go about, and I tell the spirit, you know, hey, watch over things till I get home, please. And she said, I feel like my house is guarded and secure and everything's safe. So you can look at things in a positive way, turn them into a positive situation.
Did you ever dabble with a Ouija board, John, when you were a kid?
Oh, I don't dabble. I'm a serious practitioner.
You are? Of the Ouija board?
You betcha.
Nothing negative's happened to you?
Never. I'm an absolutely serious practitioner. I was introduced to the Ouija board in a serious way when I was in my teens from a woman that met me, and she had known several famous psychics at the time, like Peter Hercos level. And
oh, sure. Yeah,
thing.
Way back.
And
yeah.
And she was more impressed with me, she said, than anybody that she had seen, anybody she had met. And she was a serious practitioner of the board, and she introduced me to it in a serious way, and I began to use it that way. And there's various cultures. Native Americans had the equivalent of talking boards, and way back in ancient Rome, supposedly, I read, they had the equivalent of some similar thing. So this is something that's been through all cultures, and it's been demonized. It's been through all the movies and through, again, the Bible and various other things. Oh, it's a tool.
And probably me.
Probably you. It's a tool to conjure the devil, and it opens up darkness. And it doesn't. I've used it very successfully ever since I was in my teens. I've never had any negative experiences with it. I've gotten some very positive, very useful information with it. As a matter of fact, I'm sitting here looking now at won an auction on eBay a number of years back, decades ago, and got one of the original William Fuld boards. That's
an old classic, isn't it?
Yeah, way, way, way old.
John, we're going to take a break, but we'll come back for more. We'll take calls next hour with you, but we'll talk more about your work, A Knock in the Attic. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, back with John Russell as we're talking about the paranormal side of life, A Knock in the Attic, and one of his other books, Writing with Ghosts. And you have had more than 800 supernatural manifestations. You've witnessed that. Have you seen anything strange and bizarre, John, in those 800?
Oh, just about everything has been strange and bizarre. There's been a lot. I think that, you know, we have to realize that we have a very narrow view of what intelligence, life, and spirituality must be. For example, when people talk about extraterrestrials, we look for other Earths. We look for planets that can support life as we know what life is.
Exactly.
But hey, there may be beings out there that breathe nitrogen and oxygen is dangerous to them, okay? So we have to open up and realize that we have a very narrow view that is very concentric. It's very self-centered. We assume other things have to look like us, be like us, act like us, or whatever. And investigating the paranormal realm, you find out that that's not the case. You can discover, for example, as I have, that there are weather manifestations that seem to indicate that either storms in and of themselves are sentient or are controlled by sentient beings. You learn that there are nature spirits that are not anything like what we assume or understand or know. I have seen a winged fairy. So that kind of blew my mind. So there's a lot of things out there that we have to be receptive to, open up to, and say, okay, we have to meet those things on their terms. You know, what is this? And why is it here? And what does it manifest? What message does it have? And some things just exist out there just like we do. And occasionally we run across them, like Sasquatch, for example, or a fairy or whatever. We say, okay, there's these other beings, these other entities, these other intelligences out there. And we have to adapt to that. I always tell people when they talk about intelligence and they talk about artificial intelligence, well, it's not artificial intelligence, it's machine intelligence. And there's other intelligence. There's animal intelligence. There's plant intelligence. It's not our intelligence, but it's an intelligence, and it's proven to be an intelligence because they've done experiments, and they've discovered that, for example, trees will send out through their roots chemicals towards the roots of other trees. Stay away. This is my turf. Go away.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, they did a research with plants, and this is old now. This is decades and decades old. They hooked up sensors to plants and brought a flame toward the leaves of the plants, and the sensors went crazy. Hey, get away. No.
That's
worry.
Right. That's right.
So... you know, there's all these other intelligences. And before we get onto that, I wanted to go back just for a second, if I could, to the Ouija board so I don't lose folks here. Don't run away because I said Ouija board's okay.
Oh, they won't. They're pretty tough.
I had a bad experience. The Ouija board said it's going to kill my sister or whatever. Well, that's nonsense.
It was a portal to the other side.
It's a portal to the other side. And so, you know, we have these knee-jerk reactions to things that we don't really know anything about or we haven't really explored. We've heard my cousin's sister's brother said, and it's like an experience I had with Uri Geller, for example. I was on a podcast, and this one guy said, I was okay until he mentioned Uri Geller, and then, nope, that's it. Everybody knows Uri's a fraud. Well, I know Uri, not intimately, but I do know him. Well,
and he's been on our show a lot of times, too.
Yeah, I know him. I've met him. I've seen his demonstrations. I can vouch that he's the real deal. We do text periodically, Uri and I, and communicate still. And like I say, I can vouch 100% that he's the real deal. And on his website now, he has something from our CIA saying, yes, Uri's the real deal. And so you don't get that from our CIA unless, indeed, you can do what you say you can do. But people have these knee-jerk reactions to criticisms that they've read without ever bothering to find out whether it's real or whether it's not. And so we need to get past that and do a little research on our own and dig and look and find out what the real truth is. Oh, and I have to toot my own horn just a little bit. Uri gave me an endorsement for both Writing with Ghosts and A Knock in the Attic.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, and also, since we talked, Writing with Ghosts has won a Silver Award in a book competition.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, we like Uri. He's a regular guest. I got to tell you a great Uri story. When he was on the first time with us,
mm-hmm,
years ago, he said, George, I want to do an experiment. And he said, I want everybody who has watches or clocks that haven't worked in ages to get them and put them by the radio.
Right.
And I'm going to say something, and I want you as an audience to say the same thing.
Right.
And it was work,
yeah.
Work.
Oh, absolutely.
And so people did that. And then I started getting emails from people saying, oh, my God, my clock that hasn't worked in 10 years is ticking and stuff. It was weird stuff.
Absolutely.
But a year and a half later, on the weekends, we have the best of shows that we also run in earlier time slots.
Right.
And we picked Uri Geller's show that night to run.
Right.
And I didn't see that. And so I'm getting these emails from people saying, George, my watch is working. My work. And I'm going, he was on a year ago, and it's still working? It worked because we reran the show,
yep.
And he did that.
Exactly.
So he's got a lot of power there.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And that's like when I shot the pilot for the History Channel, and for the very first time ever, I write about that experience in A Knock in the Attic. It's in there in detail now. And when we went to the places like, for example, the Peterson House where Lincoln was taken after he was shot and spent the night there and then died there the next morning, and we got to go in all these places because we had the cachet of Atlas Media and the History Channel, and we went in all these places. They were open to us with no tourists, nobody there, just me and the film crew. And what most people don't realize is a lot of those things are recreations, not the original furniture or whatever that was there. And for me, that made absolutely no difference because the energy was there. You can repaint something, you can refurbish it, you can remodel it, whatever. You don't change the energy that was there in a place. So, you know, going back to Uri's program working a year later, it's the same with all energy that's there in places. You can go into a place and the energy that's there, doesn't matter what changes have been made, you can still read that energy as accurately as if everything original was still in place. So I understand that, absolutely.
And what's your take on the angelic realm? What do you think that is? Is it supernatural? Is it religious? What is it?
I do think it's supernatural, and I don't necessarily think it's religious. I do think that there are beings that we would describe as angels or guardian angels. Now, people have reported various encounters with angelic beings, some with wings and this and the other, so you can't discount that. But I don't necessarily think it's a religious thing because people from all walks of life, all religions, all faiths, all belief systems have reported encounters with angels. And I think that there is just this classification of others, these entities that we describe as angels, that do have various functions, do various things. And one of those things is to protect us, to guide us, to watch over us. And I've experienced that, like I've said, many times and have literally had my life saved on more than one occasion. And I don't want to get dogmatic about it because we don't actually really know. I mean, we come up with all these theories, and we come
sure.
up with all these classifications, and we come up with this, that, and the other, but we don't know. We're shooting in the dark at the very best. And for all the experiences that I've had, there's a lot that I know, and there's a lot that I still don't know, and there's a lot that I question and wonder about, and that's why we continue to learn, we continue to research, we continue to try. And that's why we need to get rid of all the schisms. You know, there are people that believe in UFOs, but, no, I don't believe in psychics. There's people that believe in psychics, but, well, I don't believe in the paranormal. You know, it's on and on and on. So we have to get rid of the divisions. We have to get rid of the schisms. We have to all work together. We have to try and make some sense out of this stuff.
Do you believe in demons that are out there?
I don't believe in demons per se in the biblical sense. I do believe there are negative energies and negative spirits, evil spirits, yes. All you have to do is look at the planet that we live on, and there's evil people. There are bad people.
No question. No question.
So that has to translate into the spiritual realm. It can't all be love and light and roses out there. But I don't think that people are beset by the Hollywood version of evil in the way that they think they are. Now, having said that, I was listening while we were on hold on the break, to one of the guests that you had talking about the deep state and so on and so forth that goes on. Absolutely that has to exist. Absolutely that has to be there. Anybody with any common sense can look at the world and say, man, this thing ain't running right. And since power and energy are behind things, there has to be a negative power and energy behind that. And then taking that further, there are negative energies in the spiritual realm, and we do fight against those, battle against those. Yes, absolutely. I think the thing that that hinders us in that is we get wrapped up in whatever religion that we were raised in or whatever religion we've converted to, and instead of saying, okay, what's out there that works? What gives us some real action against this evil, against this power, against this darkness? What can we do to really overcome this and really help each other and really make some positive changes? Instead of doing that, we fall back on dogma or tradition or ritual or an exorcism or whatever, which I've never seen work, by the way. People come to exorcise quote-unquote haunted houses and usually make the manifestation worse if they do anything at all. So we have to get rid of the tradition, the ritual, the dogma, and get down to what works. And when we do that, then we're going to begin to make some progress toward dealing with these negative energies and these negative people and these negative things. But absolutely, there has to be negative in the spiritual realm.
And psychic vampires and all those, they're out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
People who suck your energy away from
you. Oh, absolutely. The simplest version of that is the person that comes over to your house and talks nonstop and tells you all their problems and woes, and then, well, got to run, and leaves you drained and miserable, and, you know, now they're feeling great. So there's an example of that, and we have to disassociate ourselves from those types of people. We have to disassociate ourselves from negative thoughts, negative energies, you know, negative things. It doesn't mean you can enjoy horror movies, that's fine, but if it's something, you know, I always tell people, look, you're in control of your life. If your boyfriend likes horror movies, you don't watch them. Find something else to do together. If the Ouija board scares you, don't do it. If meditation freaks you out, don't meditate. You know, geez, maybe there are UFOs, but I don't want to go hunt them. I don't want to see them. Well, don't go hunt them. You know, we're in control of our lives, and we need to understand that if things make us uncomfortable, don't do it. We're in control. And if we want to learn more, if we want to experience more, we have to be prepared and understand, just like the lady that asked for the ghost and got one, that we may have that experience. Are you ready for that? Are you ready to find out that, oh, wow, there are beings out there that are different than me? They can interact on this realm. They can manipulate things, do things, move things, make things appear, make things disappear. Are you ready for that?
We're going to take calls next hour with John Russell as we talk about the paranormal, so get ready to do that. And you were just mentioning that cleansing doesn't work, but we've heard so many psychics that say spread sage all around your house and stuff like that to get rid of ghosts. Why are you on the other side of the camp?
Well, you know, like I said, exorcisms don't work. I think that cleansings can be beneficial. I tell people, yeah, sage your home, you know, use salt, whatever. You know, spread the white light.
Well, let me ask you this. When you say exorcisms don't work, are you saying they don't work because the person being exorcised can't be cured from the demons within them, or that there are no demons there at all?
I don't think there's demons at all in 9 out of 10 cases.
You think they're mental?
I think it's either mental or emotional, because we talk ourselves into a lot of things. You know, we're very psychosomatic, hypochondrial. All of these things are proven. You know, you tell people, oh man, are you feeling okay? Yeah, I never felt better. Why? Well, you look pale. You look a little frail today. Are you sure you don't have a fever or something? Well, and before you know it, the person's feeling sick. So we talk ourselves into things, and we allow our emotions to run away with us, and we don't investigate things far enough to know what reality is. And one good example of that is people say, well, how can you explain that this person wasn't possessed because they went into a fit and it took six people to hold them down? Well, I worked with people that had dual diagnosis, mental retardation and mental illness, and some of them were young and strong and healthy, and the voices told them what to do. And so it would take six people to hold these people down when they went into a fit. Well, we had to learn restraints that would not hurt the client when they were in the fit and wouldn't allow us to get hurt either. And in that process, we underwent this training. And part of the training was we individually had to get down on the floor, and we had to go into a fit, and other people had to hold us down and restrain us and practice these techniques. For an average, ordinary, small person, man or woman, struggling with all their might, guess how many people it took to hold them down? Six people. So, you know, look, it doesn't have anything to do with a demon. You have to get to reality. You have to have enough experience in life, enough experience in spirituality, enough experience in regular living to be able to put all this together and go, hey, wait a minute, you know, just because it took six people to hold them down don't mean there's a demon. And people get into emotional states. People get into all kinds of situations where even a normally psychologically healthy person, physically healthy person, can talk themselves into or be talked into believing that they have some evil spirit or some demon or whatever in them. And I can't really point to anything in my life that I've looked at and could say, I really believe this person is possessed. Not to say that maybe there wasn't an evil energy around them, but as far as an actual literal possession, I haven't seen anything that would convince me of that, no.
Interesting, because you are a psychic by trade, right?
Yes, yes.
Yet you are a very positive person who, I'm getting the feeling, John, after a couple interviews with you, that you really don't believe that much in the dark side of the other side.
I don't believe in it that much. I don't believe, we put too much emphasis on it. You know, the problem is that we get up and we look for a demon behind every bush. And if something goes wrong, it's got to be a curse or an evil spirit or this or that. And I think that basically we are set up in a world that's full of struggle and full of problems, absolutely. But we are given tools and techniques, if we'll look for those and find those, to overcome those problems, to do some good, to overcome the darkness and the evil in this world, and to increase the light in this world. And that's the emphasis that we should have. That's what we should be looking at. And we get on the run from darkness when we should be taking up the sword and grabbing the shield of light and running toward the darkness to destroy it. That's what we should be doing. And I am a very positive person. I am.
You seem to be.
Yeah, I've always been a very positive person. I've always had a good outlook. And one of the things that has helped me as a paranormal investigator is getting down to the truth of things. And, you know, it's like we've gone places and done paranormal investigations, and somebody said, oh, this, and this happened. And immediately my senses kicked in. It's like, no, it didn't. And I was able to verify that it was nothing more than a myth or a legend or whatever.
John, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back an hour left of phone calls with you as we talk about the paranormal world next on Coast to Coast AM.